So usually on one of the Sundays after Christmas, I don't preach, but I share a story. So the story I'm going to share this morning is called The Man Who Missed Christmas. It was written in 1911 by J. Edgar Park, who was the president of Wheaton Christian College in Illinois. Any of you know anything about Christian colleges know that Wheaton's probably a little more conservative than Ark and Dove and Presbyterians, but in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, they were more into the social gospel or social justice things. Not that that affects the story in any way, just to give you a little bit of a background. On Christmas Eve, as usual, George Mason was the last to leave the office. He stood for a moment at the window, watching the hurrying crowds below, the strings of colored Christmas lights, the fat Santa Clauses on the street corners. He was a slender man in his late 30s, this George Mason, not conspicuously successful or brilliant, but a good executive. He ran his office efficiently and well. Abruptly, he turned and walked over to a massive safe set into the far wall. He spun the dials, swung the heavy doors open, and a light went on, revealing a vault of polished steel as large as a small room. George Mason carefully propped a chair against the door of the safe and stepped inside. He took three steps forward, tilting his head so that he could see the square of white cardboard taped just above the topmost row of strong boxes. On the card, a few words were written. George Mason stared at those words, remembering. Exactly 1 year ago, he had entered this self-same vault. He had planned a rather expensive, if solitary, evening. He had decided he might need some additional cash for that night. He had not bothered to prop open the door. Ordinarily, friction held the balanced mass of metal in place. But only that morning, the people who serviced the safe had cleaned and oiled it. And then, behind George Mason's back, slowly and noiselessly, the ponderous door swung shut, and there was the click of spring clocks. The automatic light went out, and he was trapped, entombed in a terrifying darkness. Instantly, panic seized him. He hurled himself at the unyielding door. He gave a hoarse cry. The sound was like an explosion in that confined place. In the silence that followed, he heard the frantic thudding of his heart. Through his mind flashed all the stories he heard of men found suffocated in time vaults. No time clock controlled this mechanism. The safe would remain locked until it was opened from the outside tomorrow morning. Then the second realization struck him. No one would come tomorrow morning, because tomorrow morning was Christmas Day. Once more, he flung himself at that door, shouting wildly, beating with his hands until he sank on his knees, exhausted. Silence again. High-pitched, singing silence that seemed deafening. George Mason was not a smoker. He did not carry matches. Except for that tiny, luminous dial on his watch, the darkness was absolute. The blackness almost held texture. It was tangible, stifling. The time was 6:15. More than 36 hours would pass before anyone entered the office again. 36 hours in a steel box, 3 feet wide, 8 feet long. Would the oxygen last? Or, like a flash of lightning, a memory came to him, dim with the passage of time. What had they told him when they put this new safe in? Something about a safety measure for just such a crisis as this. Breathing heavily, he felt his way around the floor. The palms of his hands were sweating, but in the far right-hand corner, just above the floor, he found it. A small circular opening, some 2 inches in diameter. He thrust his finger into it and felt a faint but unmistakable cool current of air. Phew. The tension release was so sudden that he burst into tears. But at last he sat up. Surely he would not have to stay trapped for the full 36 hours. Somebody would miss him. Somebody would make inquiries. Somebody would come and release him. But who? He was an unmarried man who lived alone. The maid who cleaned his apartment was just a servant, and he had always treated her as such. He had been invited to spend Christmas Eve with his brother and his family, but children got on his nerves and they expected presents. A friend had asked him to go to the home for the elderly and play the piano. George Mason was a good musician, but he had made some excuse or another, and he had this plan, this intention, to sit at home with a good cigar, listening to some new recordings he was giving himself for Christmas. George Mason dug his nails into the palms of his hands until the pain balanced the misery that was in his mind. He had thrown away his chances. Nobody would come and get him out. Nobody. Nobody. Marked by the luminous hands of the watch, the leaden-footed seconds ticked away. He slept a little, not much. He felt no hunger, but he was tormented by thirst. Miserably, the whole of Christmas Day went by and the succeeding night. On the morning after Christmas, the head clerk came into the office at the usual time. He opened the safe but did not bother to swing the heavy door wide. Then he went into his private office. No one saw George Mason stagger out of the office that day into the corridor, run to the water cooler, and drink great gulps of water. No one paid any attention to him as he descended to the street and took a taxi home. There he shaved, changed his wrinkled clothes, ate some breakfast, and returned to his office, where his employees greeted him pleasantly, but casually. On his way to lunch that day, he met several acquaintances, but not a single one had noticed his Christmas absence. He even met his own brother, who was a member of the same luncheon club, but his brother failed to ask if he had enjoyed Christmas. Grimly, inexorably, the truth closed in on George Mason. He vanished from human society during the great festival of brotherhood, siblinghood, sisterhood, and fellowship, and no one had missed him at all. Reluctantly, almost with a sense of dread, George Mason began to think about the meaning of Christmas. Was it possible that he had been blind all these years, blind with selfishness, blind with indifference, and with pride? Wasn't Christmas the time of the year when people went out of their way to share with each other, to share with one another the joy of Christ's love? Wasn't giving, after all, the essence of Christmas? Because it marked the time that God gave his own Son to the world. All through the year that followed, with little hesitant deeds of kindness, with small unnoticed acts of unselfishness, George Mason tried to prepare himself. Now it was once more Christmas Eve. Slowly, he backed out of the safe, moved the chair that propped open that door, and closed it. He touched the grim steel face lightly, almost affectionately, as if it were an old friend. He picked up his hat and coat and certain bundles. Then he left the office and descended to the busy street. There he goes now, with his black overcoat and hat, the same George Mason of a year ago. Or is it? He walks a few blocks, then flags a taxi, anxious not to be late. His nephews are expecting him to help them trim the tree. Afterwards, he is taking his brother and his sister-in-law to a Christmas play. Why is he so inexpressibly happy? Why does this jostling against others, laden as he is with bundles, exhilarate him and excite him? Perhaps the card, the cardboard card, has something to do with it. The card that he taped in the safe a year ago on New Year's Day. On the card is written, in George Mason's own hand, to love people as Christ loved, to be indispensable somewhere. That is the purpose of life. That is the secret of happiness. End of story.